This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico. More than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
History in the making.
Leaders gather in Brussels to solve the European debt crisis.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, October 26.
Coming up, we'll get the latest on the summit in Brussels, which may be about to produce a grand plan to solve the European debt crisis.
What does Greece have to do with sunscreen? No, not what you're thinking.
What Walmart can tell us about healthcare in America.
And peace and happiness was the number one thing people wanted for Christmas last year. Not anymore.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We're going to start with Greek Week, our special coverage of why Greek debt matters to the global economy. Greece, of course, is just part of the story when it comes to the big summit going on today in Brussels. European leaders are hoping to unveil some sort of grand plan to solve the debt crisis there, and a plan that would involve expanding the European bailout fund and trying to manage a Greek debt default without bringing down the entire European banking system.
We've got a couple of people with us now to talk about this. Our regular Wednesday guest, Josh Brown, with us from New York, as well as the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, who is in Brussels. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Well, Andrew, let me start with you. What's the latest there from Brussels?
Well, they are moving, it seems, towards some kind of deal, not necessarily one with all the kind of detail the markets would like to see. And importantly, some news out of Berlin, where Chancellor Angela Merkel has been debating the issues with the German parliament. They have voted in favor of her coming to Brussels and doing some sort of deal. Very sensitive politically in Germany, so it was important for the prospects of an agreement that Chancellor Merkel get that support.
Josh Brown, to you in New York, what's the significance of what's going on in Brussels to us here in the United States, our economy in general, and, of course, to Americans individually?
Well, I think let's take how Wall Street is looking at this first. So we're starting to get a decent flow of economic data points. We had a pretty good durable goods order this morning, for example. The last thing we need right now is for negative euro headlines or developments to derail what's already a fragile economy. From the individual American's perspective, you know, they're not following every little nuance that comes out of Brussels, but what they don't want to see is a European Lehman Brothers. They don't want to see a frozen credit situation or bank insolvency here because of euro exposure. So I think most people would be happy if Europe can just push off making the big solution and get something done in the short term.
And Josh, as Washington watches this, are there any lessons we should be learning from what's going on in Brussels in terms of our own debt problems here in the United States as we prepare to deal with those?
You know, a lot of guys here on the street are saying that what we're seeing in Europe is really a preview of what's going to happen in Congress when the super committee gets underway this November. If you remember, they pushed off a decision on the debt ceiling, and now they're going to have to make some tough decisions
right here,
and we could see something very similar.
Andrew Walker, back to you in Brussels. Is there any chance that they won't reach a deal today? And if so, then what happens?
there's certainly every chance that they won't reach a deal with all the details fixed that the financial markets would like to see. I think the consequence of that would probably be a period of unease in the markets while they're just hoping that the European leaders can come to some sort of deal that will eventually underwrite stability here in Europe.
Andrew Walker, economics correspondent for the BBC, and Josh Brown of Fusion Analytics. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, U.S. creditors don't have much direct exposure to Greek debt. The Bank for International Settlements, Jeremy, tells the Wall Street Journal that the number is about 5%, right?
Okay, but there not very big.
There is some indirect involvement, though, and that's what has a lot of economists worried. Exposure, you know, is one of those words that we talk a lot about on this program, right? You may hear a lot about it during the European debt crisis especially. And Marketplace senior editor and Whiteboard host Patty Hirsch is here with a breakdown of what exposure really means. Hey, Patty.
Hello, Steve.
So when I hear the word exposure, I'm not thinking good thoughts.
No, exposure is a negative word, right?
Yes.
To most of us, exposure means you've got hypothermia, so you're essentially freezing to death. It's kind of an unfortunate choice of word for financial people to use, because exposure isn't necessarily a bad thing.
It's not?
Obviously not. I mean, you go out in the sun ever?
Of course.
Well, that's good, because the sun is a great source of vitamin D, right? But you want to keep the sun off your face. But a nice daily dose of sun on your arms and legs is actually really good for you.
All right, so I should spend more time in the sun then.
No, don't go out in the sun, Steve. You'll get sunstroke, you'll get melanoma, you'll get cancer. The sun is a killer.
All right, I get it. You're telling me that I need to moderate my exposure.
Right, or you're going to get burned. So to paraphrase, it's not the sun that burns people. It's overexposure to the sun that burns people.
So what does this have to do with the Greek government debt?
Well, Greek debt is like the sun.
It is?
Sure. I mean, there are good reasons to buy Greek debt, right? I mean, you get paid a lot of money these days for that stuff, for now, and there may even be a guarantee.
Yeah.
Maybe. But you don't want too much Greek debt. It's like you and the sun. You want to get a little, not too much.
Just like on my arms and my legs, right?
Right, just for some color and that vitamin D. And if you're smart, you won't stay out too long.
Maybe apply some sunblock.
Like a hedge, right, exactly. Like an insurance
hedge,
policy.
Yes.
Yeah, in case you stay out too long, yes. But if you go and stretch out by the pool at midday in your swimmies...
Ugh.
Yes, you're going to get covered in Greek bonds. They're all over you. I don't care how much sunblock you're wearing. You're going to get burned.
All right, so exposure, Patty, to bonds simply means you own bonds. It's the overexposure that's the problem.
Right. Bonds don't burn people.
Yeah, I think we get the message. Patty Hirsch, thanks.
Thank you.
Orders for big-ticket items, heavy machinery, computers, and the like fell in September by 0.8%.
But the Commerce Department today said taking out orders for transportation equipment and aircraft, durable goods orders actually rose. That's what Josh Brown was talking about a moment ago, by the biggest margin in 6 months.
More numbers, of course, anytime at our website. You can check the numbers of the day, the stock markets and all that, at our website, marketplace.org.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now to some news from the corporate world today. In London, struggling cell phone maker Nokia unveiled some new handsets that run on Microsoft's Windows operating system. Nokia is trying to make a comeback with the Lumia 710 and 800 models. Those are expected to be introduced in the United States sometime next year. But Marketplace's senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports the company can't afford to wait too long.
Chief Executive Stephen Elop has admitted to being desperate after Nokia's previous attempt at smartphones flopped. Now the company is counting on Microsoft's wizardry, while the software giant is hoping the partnership will provide the boost its Windows mobile system has long needed. Charles Golvin is a telecom analyst at Forrester Research.
I expect that there is going to be some burgeoning momentum behind the Windows phone system and that Nokia can ride that to some level of success. Now, that's not a slam dunk.
Nokia remains the global leader by number of cell phones, but Golvin says it'll have to fight hard for a share of the smartphone market here. He says the company is almost starting from scratch.
It's certainly do or die for them in the U.S. market. I think this is their last opportunity to get it right.
A few months ago, though, Nokia's CEO took comfort in the drooling that he said he saw at a preview of the company's new offerings.
I want more drool. I mean, we want that. We have to delight customers.
Do that, he says, and Nokia's problems will take care of themselves. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The nation's second-largest health insurance company, WellPoint, said this morning its customer enrollment jumped 2% last quarter to more than 34 million members. But LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus says if you really want to see what's happening in the world of healthcare, you should look at the nation's largest private employer, Walmart. David, good morning.
Good morning.
So first, tell us what Walmart is up to here.
Well, Walmart's basically scaling back its health coverage. Employees who work 24 hours a week or less, no coverage for you. For everybody else, an increase in premiums, in some cases as much as 36%. Walmart is our largest private employer. They got 1.4 million U.S. workers. If these guys can't make health care work, who can?
So you're saying we're going to start seeing this at other companies. Other employers are going to start dropping or cutting back their health coverage.
Well, we're already seeing that. In fact, health coverage up 9% this year, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation for Family Coverage. Clearly, the trend is going in that way, with workers having to pay more and more of the load. Now, clearly, our employer-based system is not working for us. And it's just a historical accident, it must be said. We got this system during World War II when Congress imposed wage caps, and companies, in turn, said, well, how about if we offer some health benefits as a perk? And the system never went away. But right now, with healthcare costs soaring, companies are finding it an unsustainable phenomenon.
Well, if that's unsustainable, and there's so much political opposition to going to a European-style single-payer model, then what are we supposed to do?
Well, that's a good question. And for reasons passing strange, a Medicare-for-all system is seen as socialism in the United States. So if not that, then how about we build on what's already coming down the pike? In 2014, under our reform law, we're going to see these 50 different state exchanges established where people can buy their insurance there. How about if we create a national exchange that would allow people to buy insurance and have that insurance follow them no matter where they go in the country for a job? And most importantly, if you lose your job, you don't lose your coverage.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
We got word from Boeing this morning. Profit in its last quarter was way better than expected. And military plane maker Northrop Grumman said its profit was up about 5% despite falling revenues. Well, what do those companies have in common? They are defense contractors, and they're keeping close tabs on what's going on in Europe with the debt crisis. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
U.S. defense contractors still sell most of their weapons to one customer, the U.S. of A. But Michael Lewis with Lazard Capital Markets said they'd also planned for belt tightening in Washington.
What we're witnessing is a diversification of the revenue streams.
Yair Reiner, an analyst at Oppenheimer, says that paid off.
They typically get 15 to 20, sometimes 25% of the revenue from customers in Europe and through the Middle East.
But European demand decreased when those countries left Afghanistan and Iraq. And now one country at the center of the European debt crisis is in no position to keep buying. Richard Abulafia is with the Thiel Group.
Greece has a very significant military, and people were counting on export sales.
No longer. Lockheed Martin used to sell planes to Greece. Now it's banking on the Middle East. But that may have its pitfalls, too. If Iraq's looking for a good deal on some F-16s, it may be able to get a sweetheart deal on some used ones from Athens. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And now, Steve, to the really important big stuff happening in Washington. A group of senators from the Northeast is introducing a bill that would make mislabeling syrup a felony.
Syrup?
Yes,
really?
It's called the Maple Act, and it's meant to crack down on people who make syrup using common sugar cane. You wouldn't want that, and
no,
they're calling it maple syrup.
You mean not coming from the sap of a maple tree?
Not actually coming from maple
tree.
Of course, these senators are from like Vermont and New York State and places with lots of maple trees. Right now, it's a misdemeanor to do that kind of mislabeling, but if it becomes a felony, those syrup counterfeiters could face 5 years in prison.
That's a lot of pancakes. President Obama's in Colorado this morning announcing a plan to make it easier for people to repay their student loans. Recent graduates are having a tough time finding work, and studies show those who can find work are making less than new graduates did just a few years ago. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the details of the president's plan.
Starting next year, low-income borrowers' student loan payments will be limited to 10% of their earnings for 20 years. After that, the rest of the loan will be forgiven. Education Secretary Arne Duncan says the savings will be substantial.
We estimate that 1.6 million student loan borrowers will see their monthly payments fall under this plan. And this has the potential to reduce the loan payments of current students as well as new graduates by hundreds of dollars each month.
borrowers who have loans from two different federal student loan programs will be able to combine them, making one payment a month and shaving 0.5% off the interest rate on some of their loans. Today's announcement comes as the College Board is releasing a new report on higher education costs. It says average in-state tuition and fees at four-year public colleges are up more than 8% this year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Well, we will end this podcast right where we began it with Greek Week. Now, as the Greek debt crisis continues to stir trouble in Europe, the explanations of the situation seem to grow ever more, well, epic.
Yeah, epic. I can remember growing up in a Greek household, Jeremy, that I got all kinds of stories about mythology, about, you know, ancient Greece and things like that. My father used to tell me, I remember one time he said that, who was it? Archimedes, the famous Greek mathematician, was on the beach and he was drawing a circle and a Roman soldier before he was killed. He said, Mimu tus kiklus tarete. Do you know what that means?
Oh, yeah. I use that term all the time.
Do you really? Yeah, you right. do. It means don't mess with my circle. Never forget that. So it applies to absolutely nothing in real life, but my father thought it was important for me to know. In today's Midday Extra, Jeremy, we're going to hear a hypothetical office conversation over the best way to couch the current Greek financial issues in terms straight from the ancient mythology. Turns out it might be harder than it seems to find exactly the right metaphor.
Hey, Sharon? Hi. I can totally solve this Greek debt crisis thing.
Really?
Well, how to cover it. I mean, you guys just aren't being creative enough.
Marty, you're an intern on the small business beat. Stick to that.
Yeah, but I majored in classics. Summa cum laude. I have an encyclopedic knowledge of Greek drama, epic poetry, mythology. I can find the perfect analogy. Greek word, by the way. Analogy. Wait. Getting the Greek economy back on track will be like the gods climbing Mount Olympus.
Nice.
Marty, the gods lived there. They didn't have to climb.
All right. It'll be like a marathon. You know, like the warrior running the 26 miles to Athens to say Greece won.
That's not actually how the Battle of Marathon ended. It's just a story. So perhaps a more subtle approach.
Oh, I gotcha. The economy, Greek word, by the way, as Persephone, goddess of the underworld.
You know what? Fine. Go for it. Find your golden fleece. Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, right.
So, deadline's in 2 hours. How's it going?
Well, I figured out I have an Oedipal complex. One.
Okay, this is not an economical Greek word use of our time.
Wait, what about Sisyphus? It's like Greece.
Let's just report what's really going on.
You're totally messing with my eros.
Ethos.
Whatever.
And finally, this morning, clothing tops the list of the most wanted things for the holidays this year. That's according, Jeremy, to the 2011 Consumer Electronics Association's Holiday Purchase
clothing
Study. Clothing. Tablet and notebook computers came in second and third on the list, followed by peace and happiness and money rounding out the top five. Peace and happiness, by the way, was number one on the list last year. Number one. It's fallen four spots this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Apparently, the more realistic gift this year is an iPad or a Donna Karan blouse than peace and happiness.
You know, it could be that things have gotten better in the world.
Is that what that means?
Therefore, we don't need peace and happiness as much.
Or we don't think we need it that much. We don't think it's that far out of our grasp. Is that what it is? Or am I really reading too much of it? Maybe I could read it on my iPad. Yeah,
people just want to. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.